Robinhood Radio presents Flavor Matters with Serge Matakians. He's the owner of Saravan Restaurant in Armenia. If you can't find him in the kitchen or gardens, then follow him either on Facebook or Twitter at Saravan NY.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. This is Serge from Flavor Matters and Saravan Restaurant, continuing my quest in a better understanding of Armenians and Armenia, and the Armenia series, as I call it. And I am thrilled that my friend, Armin Hovhannessian, a photographer and an artist, a mother, and like I, an Armenian Iranian currently living in Los Angeles, has joined me. Hi, Arminejad.
Hi, Sarjikjan. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for agreeing to do this. A quick disclaimer. I have Armin and I, we've known each other since first grade or second grade. I don't remember.
Yeah, we're not talking about the years now. Yeah.
No, we're not talking about the years, but I have that image of your coming to school with that beautiful braid that you had and walking. So just the memory. So,
all right.
Arminejan, thank you for joining. The purpose of this series is for me, on a personal note, as you and I have spoken, is to develop a deeper understanding of what it means to be an Armenian. What is an Armenian? What is Armenia? And also, hopefully, introducing the listeners to what an Armenian is, what are Armenians. I call it the worlds of Armenians. So you were, let's go back to September of 1978. You were outside of Tehran. You were on vacation. At the end of the vacation, September, like most Armenian Iranians and Iranians, we get the news that stick around, don't come back yet. That came mostly from the fathers.
Right.
Mothers who were out with the kids and enjoying. And all you had were your suitcases and relatives that you were visiting. So take us back, 1978, September.
Well, actually, it was mid-August or so. And my father used to work for the Iranian Airlines, and he had inside scoop as to what was going on inside the country. So one day he called us and he said, "You guys better just stick around there for a while. We don't know what's going to be happening here." Of course, I wasn't happy about the decision. I didn't want to stay. I had my friends, I had my school, you know, I just needed to go back to the life I knew. And unfortunately, we were forced to stay. And my mother decided for us to relocate to Boston. And because
where
she had
you when you received
the we were in at the time, I can't remember, to be very honest with you, we were either in Los Angeles or San Francisco. What happened is we got the call, and then my mother decided to move to Boston because her uncle was living there at the time. So she had family. So we moved there, and of course, I'm in tears every day. I don't want to stay here. I don't want to stay here. Then, you know, had to enroll in high school. We had to request some papers from my school in Tehran. My aunt was kind enough to like overnight all those papers to us. And
we should say your mom's sister, who's an opera singer.
Yeah.
And
right.
What I think is interesting, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Is interesting, and I'm a little bit curious to hear about this, is sort of this forced migration. You know, here you are, middle class, upper middle class Armenian Iranian from Tehran. you know, worldly family, highly educated, cultured family, and all of a sudden you're told you cannot come home and all you have are the suitcases.
Yeah, no, it's really devastating, and it does leave quite a lot of trauma. It took me probably about a year and a half to try to accept the facts and just live with the trauma and just learn to let it go and say, okay, this is the, now these are the lemons that life has given me. What am I doing with this right now?
You are a 16-year-old girl.
Actually, yeah, I had my 16th birthday in Boston. Yeah.
Because we're the same age. And yeah. I had my 17th birthday when I had to leave Iran. In the U.S. And then your brother was, I forget how old your brother was.
Probably 7, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, very traumatic. So to me, I think it's interesting, and I want our listeners to get an idea of this, that this isn't by choice. You're forced to stay because you cannot go home, and you're forced to make a life for yourself. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I know that as the government in Iran changed, the rules and the financial rules and restrictions of whether your father could help you financially or not help you financially, all of that, I know that for our family, our family couldn't send us money. So we were sort of just stuck. So I want you to say a little bit about that, so our listeners get an idea that when we talk about immigrants or migration, it isn't necessarily always, you know, people that come here and want a better life, that sometimes you're forced to stay.
Yeah, sometimes you're forced. And there was also the factor that at the time I was not an adult.
Yeah,
I was not of legal age, so I could not make my own decisions. And it's really difficult because once you're used to a certain lifestyle, and then that lifestyle is just like the rug is pulled out from under your feet, and you're basically starting from zero, exactly. Starting from scratch. And then it's the whole process of assimilating in a different culture. And I'm like, okay, I need to do this quickly, or else I'm going to be lost and I'm going to drown, or something's going to happen, you know. So I just, you know, pulled my chin up and just went to high school, which was horrible. Horrible. The first year was just terrible.
Wasn't because of the language?
No, the language was never. No, the language was never an issue. My English was fairly good. I had no like communication or miscommunication issues. It was just like the all those teenagers in high school,
right.
To me, they looked like they were like 7 or 8 years old compared to my peers from where we came from. You know, I had nothing to talk to them about. What excited them was getting drunk. To me, getting drunk never meant anything because right. We weren't raised in that culture.
Right.
And on top of that, there was quite a lot of discrimination. So I was Armenian, so they had really, really bad issues with Armenians. I was being pushed around the halls, you know, just people would trip me, and it was really bad. It was really bad.
Very interesting point you raised, because I moved to California and I was shocked at how much dislike there was for Armenians.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
The late 1970s and early 80s.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And then in 79, when the revolution happened and I was already a senior in high school, what I did is I befriended one of the toughest girls in high school. So, but just magically, everyone just left me alone, you know, magically.
Move on your side.
So I got to take care of me. Yeah. I got to do my diplomatic, put my diplomatic hat on.
Yeah. So, elaborate a little bit about the assimilation process. I mean, I sometimes think about mine, 1978, 79, 80, 81. I really did feel like a fish out of water. And even though I spoke English, I realized that expressing myself in English wasn't that easy. So it took me a while to do that. Your mother was there, who was this cultured, educated woman, society woman, and all of a sudden she had to take this menial jobs to be able to support you guys.
Exactly.
I mean, that household environment, I want our listeners to get an idea of how did you maintain a sense of sanity and normalcy? Because, I mean, it's upside down.
It's definitely upside down.
How Tikin Ruzan was able to.
Well, she's, you know, she's a tough cookie. And when things get tough, you have to, if you want to move forward, you do what you need to do. So even I started working in a bakery shop part time. So I've been actually working since I was 16. So I had my own pocket money because I knew I didn't have, you know, my dad or the money source wasn't there. My mom was doing, the odd jobs here and there. But what I decided to do was to take care of me because I just didn't want to be a burden on anybody else. So I'm like, okay, what is it I need to do to take care of me? I worked, I went to school, I graduated, you know, I went to college, I worked, and what I did was, music's always been a big part of my life.
I was going to say that. So what was your escape? Where did you find your own identity?
My at those years, especially this is after high school, because a lot of the things are actually a blur. I don't remember a whole lot at this moment. But after high school, when I went to college, I went to my favorite radio station at the time and asked them if they needed interns or if they were hiring people, whatnot. So they liked my personality. So they told me they can't pay me, but, you know, they'd love to have me to do the listener line, just to, you know, answer the phone. I'm like in a heartbeat. So I did that. I was there for about 3 years. And then I was working with a music director for a while. The music scene was really happening in Boston at the time. So I spent a lot of times in clubs seeing bands, and I had like a group of friends that we all did this together. So those people actually kept me sane. And of course, music kept me sane. Other than that, you know, I always find a way not to let everything else drag me in and pull me down deeper into a hole, you know?
So music was an outlet for you, and it was a way of expressing yourself. And I don't want to, again, put words in your mouth or describe you to listeners, but I think sort of that punk scene.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
A way of expressing yourself.
Absolutely.
Was I think your creative outlet.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Those years were really the stepping stones of me finding what kind of a person I am, what kind of things I like, how do I want to be? Am I going to sit in the corner and stay quiet, or am I going to be an outspoken person and defend myself and defend like people I love? So that whole punk scene kind of gave me sort of like sort of a kick. Like it gave me it gave me the permission. It gave me the ability to be more confident, you know. But it's not only listening to music, it's what it does to you mentally and emotionally. And
how you express that,
how you do that.
Hermine, we are coming to an end to this segment. I know you're a very creative person and you're a very Armenian. Your Armenian-ness is a very strong identity, sense of identity with you. And I hope that we can, in our next episode, discuss how your creative process has evolved and how your photography has evolved and how your being an Armenian woman who has had you. It's important to reiterate that you that for both for all of us who were forced to immigrate, that there was a trauma involved in that and how we've come through that trauma and how we have developed our own sense of identity. This is Serge from Flavor Matters and Sarah Van Restaurant, and I've had the pleasure of speaking with Armin Hovhannisyan, an Armenian artist currently living in Los Angeles, California, and I hope that you will tune in for our next segment. Thank you very much.
Flavor Matters is a joint production of the Sarah Van Restaurant and Robin Hood Radio. For more information on the Sarah Van Restaurant in Amelia, New York, saravan.com on the web.